Podcast. I'm reporter Chris Olson, and I'm joined today by Amherst attorney John C. Boniface. He's the co-founder and president of the nonprofit organization Free Speech for People, which is celebrating a significant recent victory in the state of Florida, among other activities, which we'll talk about. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
We'll talk about St. Petersburg in a moment, but first, just to give people a little bit of background, what is Free Speech for People? When was it formed and why was it formed?
Free Speech for People was launched on the day of the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in Citizens United, the FEC, more than 7 years ago in January of 2010. We were launched to challenge that ruling and the doctrines underlying that ruling of money equaling speech and corporations being treated as people, to take on big money in politics and unchecked corporate power, and to restore democracy to the people. We're a national, nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working across the country in this fight to reclaim our democracy.
So do you want to talk maybe a little bit even more about sort of what the typical activities you've been involved in are?
Yes, we specialize on the legal advocacy side in pushing back in the courts to take on these doctrines underlying the Citizens United ruling to challenge big money in politics and unchecked corporate powers. We also have engaged in helping lead a growing national campaign for a 28th Amendment to the Constitution to overturn that ruling and the doctrines underlying that ruling. And since the election in 2016, we have been a leading force in taking on the unprecedented corruption of the White House. So we engage in all these activities via our legal advocacy, via public education, via organizing, working with activists and citizens all over the country.
Maybe we'll get back to a little bit more of that in a second, but why don't we talk, since it's sort of the one of the more recent developments with Free Speech for People. You know, I alluded to a success story in Florida. This was St. Petersburg. Tell us about what you got involved with there and what you were able to accomplish.
So St. Petersburg, Florida, has now become a historic place for taking on big money in politics. It's St. Petersburg City Council on October 5th, by a vote of 6-2, passed a model law which will ban super PAC spending in elections there, as well as banning foreign corporate money in local elections. And the City Council took this action after 15 months of deliberation, hearing from thousands of citizens all across the city. We helped to draft this model law, and we were very engaged in helping to lead this campaign, which included 25-plus local groups in the city of St. Petersburg. And the city, I think, should be congratulated for taking this step. It is a model law for the nation, the first of its kind in the country, and it really, I think, is designed to protect the integrity of elections in St. Petersburg, as well as to inspire other communities to take a similar action.
Is that a big issue? I know obviously super PAC money affects our national elections and our statewide elections, but it's an issue too, even down to the municipal level?
It is an issue at the municipal level, and in fact, St. Petersburg has already begun to feel the impact of super PAC spending on its own elections. It's seen that happening in its own local races. And the threat of foreign corporate money is also present and has been documented in various places in the country, and including in Florida itself. What's significant here is that the city council heard a testimony from Free Speech for People, from legal scholars that we helped to enlist in support of the ordinance, including Harvard Law Professor Lauren Strive, Harvard Law Professor Charles Freed, and Harvard Law Professor John Coates, all of whom testified to the City Council as to the constitutionality of this ordinance. And it does, I think, present the opportunity, if in fact the city needs to defend this law in court to raise these questions as to the constitutionality of super PACs and foreign corporate money in our elections.
Why St. Petersburg?
St. Petersburg actually has been a leader in this overall fight to take on big money in politics. In 2014, it was one of the first communities to pass a resolution calling for a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United, and there were people in the city ready to take on this fight and join us, and we were proud to collaborate with them.
Now, I've sort of read some things in the local media down there that suggest that that this may well end up being challenged in court, this vote. Do you expect that to happen? And if so, do you expect that the vote will be able to survive that scrutiny?
Well, there was plenty of discussion before the city council in the 15 months during this campaign of the potential for a court challenge, and the city council members who voted for this ordinance were well aware that that may happen. I'm not sure whether it will happen, but if it does, we're prepared to help lead the defense of this model law, and we do believe it will survive court scrutiny. There are really two issues with this ordinance, as I said. One is around super PAC spending, and super PAC spending did not come directly out of the Citizens United ruling. It came, in fact, out of a federal appeals court ruling known as SpeechNow.org v. FEC, which was a March 2010 D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals ruling 2 months after the Citizens United ruling. And the error of that ruling was to apply one line from Citizens United that independent expenditures cannot corrupt, and then to say that, therefore, unlimited donations to PACs cannot corrupt either. And this, in fact, is counter to what even the Citizens United majority held, because the Citizens United majority recognized that contribution limits to candidates still were necessary to prevent corruption and the appearance of corruption. And in fact, dating back to the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in 1976 in Buckley v. Valeo, the Supreme Court has made clear that such contribution limits are constitutional. And here what we have with super PACs is a way to evade those contribution limits. Now someone who can't give more than $2,700 to a federal candidate in a primary or general election can give $100 million or more if they have the means through a super PAC. And that is, I think, the central question that will be present to the courts if, in fact, there is a court case out of this, which is that the SpeechNow ruling was wrong. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals has yet to decide this question. It's a case of first impression for the 11th Circuit and for the Supreme Court, which has yet to review the SpeechNow ruling. So that's one piece of the ordinance. The other piece is around foreign corporate money, and that too is a question that we believe will survive court scrutiny, because the Supreme Court itself, 2 years after Citizens United, in the case of Blumen v. FEC, upheld the longstanding ban on foreign nationals having any role whatsoever in our elections at the federal, state, and local level. And if they cannot participate directly or indirectly in making expenditures in our elections, then surely they should not be able to use the corporate form to try to influence our elections either.
So if the first aspect, the SpeechNow aspect of it, gets to the Supreme Court, do we have any hope that a court that now includes Justice Gorsuch will rule in your favor in that regard?
Well, Justice Gorsuch, of course, replaced Justice Scalia, and we never looked at Justice Scalia as a vote in favor of reversing SpeechNow. But the fact is that we have begun this whole project with respect to challenging SpeechNow back in 2015, prior to Justice Scalia's passing. In fact, we held a forum at Harvard Law School with professors, Harvard Law Professor Lawrence Tribe, as well as University of Chicago Law Professor Al Altshuler, going forward with this question of the vulnerability of speech now, and Professor Auschwitz has written a seminal law review article that outlines the arguments for why speech now is wrongly decided. So it's really not about Justice Gorsuch. This question of speech now is about even those in the Citizens United majority, which included, of course, Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kennedy, as to their view that contribution limits are still constitutional. And if that's the case, if contribution limits are still constitutional, then why shouldn't contribution limits to PACs be constitutional as well? That's essentially what goes on in this ordinance. The super PAC ban brings us back to the place where there are donation limits to political action committees. So it's not as if there aren't any political action committees that can operate in the city of St. Petersburg, but super PACs would effectively be abolished because those unlimited donations to PACs would be abolished.
And so you've described this as a model law. Are you hoping to see other cities across the country adopt it, and have efforts to do that begun? Or
we are hoping to see other jurisdictions, cities, and states. In fact, the Connecticut House of Representatives passed a version of this law that we helped to draft in its past legislative session. It didn't come up for a vote in the state Senate in Connecticut, but we're hopeful that it will be reintroduced in the next legislative session and pass both chambers. In addition, Massachusetts has bills, again, that we've been involved in helping to draft that deal with these questions and are pending now before the state legislature. And we're looking at other jurisdictions in the country, including California. And I think that what will likely happen here is as people learn about the story of St. Petersburg taking up this fight, they will look into wanting to take this up in their own communities, because at the bottom line question here is whether communities can safeguard their elections from some of the ill effects of the current campaign finance system. And this is one way they can do it. It's not going to be a panacea, but to ban super PACs and foreign corporate money in their own elections will be seen as a positive move.
One other thing that I noticed that your organization was involved in, and you know, recently the NBC News and others reported that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, reportedly anyway, called President Trump a moron, and there may or may not have been a word preceding moron in that statement, after a meeting at the Pentagon in July. You know, it's certainly been good for a few chuckles on social media and whatnot, but for your organization, that prompted some action. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, Free Speech for People recently filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the United States Department of State, as well as with the Defense Department and the Department of Homeland Security, to obtain any records whatsoever with respect to government information as to whether or not the president is a moron. And this is not actually a joke. This is a serious matter. The 25th Amendment to the Constitution, Section 4, provides for the removal of a president who is unable to carry out his duties, whether due to physical or mental incapacity. And it's our view that the cabinet must be upholding its obligation to act in the best interest of the nation. And if they believe that the president's mental capacity is diminished or that he's a moron, the American people have a right to know that and know whether the president is mentally fit for office.
As a practical matter, though, do we think that a FOIA request will actually bear some fruit? Do we know how this administration typically responds to FOIA requests, for one, and whether or not there is some sort of documentation of what you're seeking here?
Well, clearly we don't know whether there is, but we believe there may very well be if Secretary of State, as has been reported, made that statement, and if there was further discussion or even in other departments discussion as to the president's mental capacity. And as far as the Trump administration's willingness to comply with the Freedom of Information Act, if it does not, obviously the door remains open to litigate for further denial to comply with the act. So we're looking at all options here, but this is a quite serious matter with respect to our national security and with respect to the competence of our government and the executive branch. And we believe that there's an urgent need for this information before it becomes a national or even international emergency.
Back at the beginning of our conversation, you mentioned the possibility of a 28th Amendment to address Citizens United, but I guess my feeling or perspective on constitutional amendments is that that's a pretty tough road to hoe, and so what can you tell us sort of about the prospects of the 28th Amendment push being able to get over the to get over the goal line there?
Well, there's no question that the process of amending the Constitution is difficult. It's designed to be difficult, but we have done this before in our nation's history. 27 times before we've amended the Constitution, 7 of those times to overturn egregious Supreme Court rulings. We've done it to guarantee women the right to vote, to abolish poll taxes, and to ensure equal protection for all. So the fact is here that we look at the Citizens United ruling as one that is contrary to the basic principles of our democracy, to the idea of one person, one vote, of political equality for all, and it deserves an amendment to the Constitution. It requires an amendment to the Constitution to make clear that we the people rule, not we the corporations and big money interests, and that we the people have the right to regulate money in elections. 19 states are on record calling for this amendment. More than 750 communities across the country, cities and towns, are also on record. Massachusetts is one of those states, and many of the communities in that number are from Massachusetts. So, you know, this is, in fact, a national fight that's been going on since the Citizens United ruling for the past 7-plus years. We've been proud of being involved in helping to lead it. We're working closely with American Promise, which is a national campaign recently launched that is focused directly on grassroots organizing around a constitutional amendment. And while it is an uphill fight, certainly to get any amendment to the Constitution enacted, this is one we believe that can be won and must be won to defend our democracy and protect our republic.
Sounds great. Are there any other sort of activities that of free speech for people that we haven't talked about that you want to highlight? And are there any opportunities, considering that our listeners are from the Massachusetts legal community, are there any opportunities for them to get involved?
Well, we invite folks, people to join us at our website, sign up for updates at freespeechforpeople.org to learn more about our work taking on big money in politics and unchecked corporate power. We have a whole other case that we're involved in dealing with, taking on the Speech Now ruling out of D.C., suing the Federal Election Commission. And as I said, we've also been taking on the unprecedented corruption of this presidency via a number of important campaigns, including a campaign seeking an impeachment investigation of the president. And our dedicated site for that campaign is impeachdonaldtrumpnow.org. And the legal community is very much needed in this fight, along with citizens all across the country, the fight in the courts, the fight in the court of public opinion. And we'd welcome help from attorneys in Massachusetts as well as law students. And we have a legal internship program that we run, and we'd welcome getting people involved that way as well. But this, I think, question that we face today in the nation, whether it's we the people or we the corporations and big money interests, and whether we're going to have this kind of unprecedented corruption of the presidency go unchecked, these are crucial questions for our democracy and for our Constitution. And it really does need and call out for members of the legal community to join in this fight.
I think that's a good place to end it. I appreciate you taking time to tell us a little bit about free free speech for people, and best of luck with your efforts.
Chris, thank you so much.